And episode number 12 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by the American League wildcard game that the Yankees are going to be hosting if they don't turn things around in a hurry up at Fenway this weekend.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
Welcome to episode number 12 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. You can find us at Pinstripe Lanes on social media. I'm at Ralphie Aversa on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Of course, you could also find the Pinstripe Lanes podcast pretty much anywhere you get podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe. Appreciate you for that. And PinstripeLanesPodcast.com. All right, let's hear. I was at Severino's last start at the stadium last Saturday, that doubleheader, the only game they lost against the Royals. It was Military Appreciation Day. It was Budweiser Camo Cap Day for the first 18,000 fans 21 years of age or older. I've gone to this game, by the way, for the past 3 years because I like it. I use Clear to get into the stadium quick. So even though I showed up a little later, I still got my hat. For a free hat, it's a pretty cool hat. That said, I gave it away to a friend that really wanted it. We'll post some photos, though, on Instagram at Pinstripe Lanes. Anyways, the game, definitely not as good as the hat. It was, like I said, the only game that the Yankees lost last weekend. And now they're in the midst of another four-game series, a much more important one up in Boston against their division rival Red Sox. Severino slated to start tonight, Friday night. How will he fare? We'll ask that question, amongst many others, to our guest this week. Gave us a great half-hour spot, and it's so great that I really don't want to edit any of it, so I'm going to wrap this up right now. Episode number 12 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast with Yes Network in-studio analyst Jack Curry. And welcome back to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Of course, you can find us on pretty much anywhere you get podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, also at PinstripeLanesPodcast.com and at Pinstripe Lanes throughout social media. All right, our guest this week actually started with the New York Times back in 1987. In 91, he was named the Yankees beat reporter, and he stayed in that role until 98 when he became the national baseball writer for the Times. In December of 2009, he left the Times and just a few months later joined the Network full-time to serve as an in-studio analyst, reporter, and contributor to both the network's year-round coverage on air and online at yesnetwork.com. He has received a plethora of Emmy nominations for his work on both the cable and digital platforms. He also co-authored a New York Times bestseller with Derek Jeter in 2000, The Life You Imagine, Life Lessons for Achieving Your Dreams. A graduate of Fordham, a member of the Hudson Catholic High School Hall of Fame, a huge music fan, and a resident of Rivervale, we welcome on to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, Mr. Jack Curry. Jack, thanks again for the time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Ralphie, it's great to talk to you. And wow, you just zipped through a lot of my life there in about under a minute. I can tell that you are a professional announcer, and I like how you condensed everything so neatly there.
Oh, well, we obviously had to give you the proper intro. And I think, you know, it's interesting because some people, especially the newer fans of the Yankees and the new generation, they may tune in and see you and they may not realize exactly what your background is and the fact that, you know, you were contributing to Yes Network coverage as far back as 05. And even before that, you had done some stuff with MSG. But I actually want to start present day, present week, because we pushed back the taping of our podcast this week past the trade deadline. And obviously it's a busy week for you with both the trade deadline and now the Yankees in the middle of this very important four-game series up at Fenway. How is it different covering the trade deadline from when you were at the New York Times to now as a member of the Yes Network team?
That's a great question, Ralphie. And opposed to the Times versus Yes, for me, it's almost social media / Twitter, which has made the difference. When I was at the Times, say in the 90s, and you didn't have Twitter and you didn't have this immediate way to break a trade, it was constant conversations with editors to let them know who you had reached out to, what source you had heard from. nowadays, if I get a crumb of news, it's going on Twitter. I'm not calling an editor or I'm not calling a producer at Yes and saying, oh, by the way, this is what I'm hearing. It's such an immediate forum to be able to get your news out there. I think as opposed to the Times versus Yes, it's now the way our coverage of the world has changed. I go to Twitter when I want to get an update on something. I'm going on Twitter, mostly sports, to see what's going on. So I think that's what has changed everything. And in the old days, Ralphie, if you broke a story, say a trade story, and you had it cold, you got the chance to revel in that for 24 hours. Now you're lucky if you get 24 seconds, because if someone breaks a piece of information baseball-wise, someone else usually can confirm it in a minute or two. So your little scoop doesn't last very long on Twitter.
I don't know how often you talk with beat reporters, especially those with the Yankees, but I mean, is their process changed now as well? Like, do they still have to go to an editor, or do you, is that kind of like an added bonus of being with the Yes Network? Because you're on the TV side, because you're with the Yes Network, you can just go right to Twitter when you hear something because you've built up that trust, that cachet, you have the resume, so on and so forth.
I would think, and I don't want to speak for other beat reporters, but I'm good friends with a lot of the guys who cover the Yankees, and Twitter is so immediate. I don't think anyone is running these scoops past their editors and saying, hey, can I tweet this? Because if you did, you're always going to be behind the eight ball. So I think there's a trust factor. I know when I was at the Times, I used to always get two sources per story. If someone gave me some information, I needed to confirm it with a second person. I still try and follow that same philosophy at the Times. I'm going to be honest with you, though, Ralphie, in the Twitter world, if that first source is believable enough and someone who I have trusted in the past, I don't always go for that second confirmation. I'll want to be first. I want to get it out there. So you want to be right. That's the most important thing. Being first is nice sometimes too.
Jack Curry of the Yes Network here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. I would imagine people just assume that because you're working for the Yes Network that you have an advantage over some of those other beat reporters. I wonder though, and you know, obviously too, business behind the scenes dealings, you know, the Yankees at the moment at least own a minority in Yes Network. The majority is still owned by Fox, although there's a number of pending things that could happen there. Does being a reporter for the Yes Network almost hinder you sometimes with some of your sources?
I'm always amused. I'm going to go back to the first part of what you said. I'm always amused a little bit that people think that because we work for Yes, and as you said, the Yankees own 20% of the network, that there's this great Yankee source in the sky who was saying, okay, we are making some news here. please, let's inform the Yes Network first. I do my job the same way I did when I was at the Times, and I'm calling people, and I'm trying to get news ahead of other people, and sometimes you're first, and sometimes you're not. So I always chuckle a little bit when people say, oh, well, you work for Yes, and they handed that to you. One of my pet peeves as a reporter was when someone else breaks news, this would be a crotchety reporter saying this, someone else breaks news, it got handed to them. Someone leaked it to them. But when I break news, I worked really hard to get that news. I've had many a conversation with reporters I respect who we kind of chuckle at that. So I don't think being at Yes has ever hindered me. And I will tell you this, Ralphie, we're talking about breaking news, but I'm going to take it into the clubhouse for a second. I worked for the Times for 22 years, and it's the New York Times. I got to Yes, and players elevate you when you're on TV. It's a simple statement of fact. The kids who play at AAA or played at AAA, they might have seen the byline Jack Curry a few times. But they don't know who I wouldn't have known who I was when I walked in the clubhouse. When you're on TV, they've seen you. I can't tell you how many players from the minor leagues who have said hello to me by name. That never happened when I worked at the Times.
Jack Curry of the Yes Network here. I think if anyone at all was skeptical of the Yes Network operating separate from the Yankees organization. They don't have to look that far in history. All they have to look back to, matter of fact, is this whole Gary Sanchez series of issues that happened right before he was placed again on the DL. I thought it was a very, this year, interesting moment for the network because, you know, both yourself, obviously, you know, Flash, and pretty much everyone around the network, it seemed, you guys called it the way you saw it in regards to the two Sanchez lapses. Speaking specifically towards that, I mean, what is the editorial process? Is there any at all impact being the Yes Network when you guys are, you know, when you have to make a tough statement like that about a player or about the team?
I can speak for myself, and I know that when I was hired by John Filippelli, he said, we want you to report. That's why you're here. We want you to do the same things you did at the Times, and instead of maybe writing a 900-word column, turn that into 4 or 5 points on a pregame or a postgame, and that's what we need you to do. Again, the idea that there is this mythical person in the sky saying, no, you can't talk about this, at least to me, I can only speak for myself, that has never happened with me. I think the one thing I would be honest with you about is we'll make a point, we'll discuss it, but we're not a sports talk radio show. We're not going to do an hour postgame where Sanchez is a great example, by the way. We're not going to do an hour postgame where 55 minutes of it is going to be Gary Sanchez. We might do 3 of the 6 segments where we touch upon Sanchez. Here's the play. Here's what we think. All right, here's the next segment. Here's what Aaron Boone thinks. Here's the next segment. We're going to have Gary Sanchez chime in. But I believe that viewers want honesty and that viewers want you to tell them your insight and what you've seen. And I think if you gloss over something or fail to cover something, I think your viewers are going to be angry with you. I think your viewers are going to say, wait a second, this isn't the type of coverage that I'm expecting.
So you had a, obviously, I guess, to some degree or another, change your writing style now that you're writing and speaking and presenting on camera?
100%. It's different, and it's shorter. It's getting to bullet points. When I was writing at the Times, it's more of building up your story. And say I wanted to write about CeCe Sabathia's slider, I might start with an anecdote that he first threw a slider when he was 12 years old, and he was in the backyard with a friend, and it was a hot day in California, and they had just finished closing down their lemonade stand, and he picked up the baseball, and boom, there was the slider. Well, it just took me about 20 seconds to say that. In TV, I might have 40 seconds to make a point about his slider, so I've learned that it has to be quicker, you have to condense your thoughts, you have to get to them in a more expeditious manner.
Maybe for me, as someone who watched the Yes Network since its inception, it's different. But when I was looking back at how long you've been with the Yes Network, I was actually surprised because you still, to me, seem like one of the newer guys there, yet you've been there. This is like your 9th season now, I believe. Does it feel like it's been that long?
It's interesting that you say that, Ralphie. I guess the answer to me is yes, it does feel that long, but I pretty much, other than Meredith Marakovic, who was our clubhouse reporter, I pretty much am the new guy, and I guess she'd be the new gal. everybody else has been there longer than us. Bob Lorenz, who I work with every night, has been there pretty much since day one. Michael Kay has been there since day one. You look at Ken Singleton, he's been there since day one. David Cohn had a brief hiatus in there, but he's had a long tenure. O'Neill. So I do feel like it's still new, and I like the fact that it's new. I end up talking to a lot of high school and college journalists and aspiring sports journalists and broadcasters. And I tell them that cliche that we've all heard, but it's true. Find a part of this business that you really embrace and that you want to do, and you will feel as if you're not going to work. I mean, I get to go to work and talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox. If my life had taken a different path and I was a teacher or a coach or an accountant, you know what I'd be doing on a Friday night? I'd be hanging out with some friends, and we'd be talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox. So the fact that I get to do that for a living, I'm eternally grateful.
I want to talk actually about two of your colleagues, one of whom I spoke with a few weeks ago And I brought this up with Rick Cerrone, who, of course, I'm sure you dealt with for forever and probably know well, the former PR director, the Cerrone with two R's, not one, the former PR director of the Yankees. And I asked him about Paul O'Neill because I have found it interesting, you know, and I'm sure you saw this as well when you were with the Times covering Paul O'Neill. A professional, would stand in front of his locker, no question. Very serious, though, very intense, very locked in. And now we see and hear him on these broadcasts, and he's just, he's like kind of like the class clown. He's such a jokester, and I would have never expected it. What's that like from your perspective to see that?
Well, one quick adjustment. I have to edit one thing you said. O'Neill, 90% of the time, didn't stand in front of his locker. He sat. He did all of his interviews sitting down because he took the game so hard. He is one of my top five or top 10 players who, when you approached his locker after a game, that guy was wearing the result on his face. I liked talking to Paul O'Neill about baseball a lot when he was a player, and I've teased him in his retirement years. He was, Ralphie, an infinitely better interview when something didn't go right for him than he was when things did go right. I recall a game, I think it was at Yankee Stadium. I'd have to go back and look. But the point is, he had three home runs in a game. And when we talked to him after the game about those three home runs, you would have thought we were trying to talk to him about the worst lunch he had in his life. He was deflecting questions. He was saying, just trying to put the bat on the ball. I couldn't believe how unhelpful he was about a glorious day. And to your point, that side of him, that jolly, joking side, we didn't really see that when he was a player. I think the intensity meter was so high for him that he couldn't show that. I think every day was a grind. I think Paul O'Neill would tell you that. He had a fantastic major league career, but I think every day he doubted himself. I think every day he wondered, is this the day I'm going to be 0 for 5? Does 0 for 5 become 0 for 10? Does 0 for 10 become 0 for 20 and I've lost my job? And I think some great players will tell you that's how they motivated themselves. This side of his personality that we're seeing now, I think you're right. I think fans/viewers get great joy in knowing that, hey, wow, that's Paul O'Neill. That's the guy who used to smash water coolers all the time.
The other colleague I wanted to bring up is obviously somebody who you work with on pretty much a nightly basis, and that's Bob Lorenz. What's your relationship like with him?
I always call Bob Lorenz the most selfless person I've ever worked with, and that's a long list of people since I was at the Times for 22 years. I worked at a newspaper in New Jersey a year before that. Bob wants you to have a better show than he did. And you've worked with people before, Ralphie, and I'm sure you've had a ton of people you've got along with very well. But to think that someone is asking you to help make you better. Again, Bob and I have worked together at least since 05 because I used to do some appearances on the YES Network. So I got to know him really well before I actually got hired by YES. And he's become one of my best friends. We spent every night together. We watch every game in Bob's office after the pregame. We prepare for the postgame. And what I like about that is it's so comfortable that the shows just flow. We have meetings and we have formats and we have things that we talk about, but sometimes it's just off the cuff that becomes the best TV, just something spontaneous that he knows I'm passionate about or something I want to talk about. And it makes for some of the best TV. So both Bob and the producer of our pregames and postgames, Jared Boschnack, two of my best friends, and it's great that I get a chance to work with both of them.
Interesting, you mentioned the office visits with Mr. Lorenz, because sometimes we get to see those on social media, and that actually leads into my next question. I'm curious, and I think you know someone listening to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast would be as well. Let's just take a typical Yankees home game, 7:05. Weeknight first pitch. You got a pregame at 6:30. We'll just say for intents and purposes, Yankees batting practice is on at 6. So the studio's in use then as well. What is a day like in your life? What's your typical itinerary?
Well, it starts long before I get to the studio because it almost starts the night before, Ralphie, because I get back from a post game and I'm reading online already. Okay, what have the reporters that I respect, what have they written? Get up the next morning, see if anybody's looking for me from YES. I might text a source or two if there's a story percolating, something that I'm interested in presenting to our pregame. I live in New Jersey. I leave my house around 2 or 2:30 to get to our studio. get there. Our research team is fantastic. There's a ton of research material to go through. As a guy with a newspaper background, I've already done a lot of my own research. We'll have a pre-show meeting that usually lasts about 20 minutes. We'll put makeup on. We'll get ready to do our show. And after the pregame, we'll sit in Bob's office and spend 9 innings just watching baseball, talking baseball. And the beauty of that, Ralphie, is sometimes we'll talk nonstop for 3 innings. Sometimes we won't say a word for 2 or 3 innings. The game is what's important, and we're sitting there watching the game. Our producer, Jared, will pop in at some point and say, what do you want to focus on for the post game? Here's what I'm thinking. We'll bat around a couple of ideas, have a little mini meeting there, and then go upstairs and do our post game. It's a well-oiled machine. I mean, for a pre- and post game, I don't want to get the number incorrect here, but just counting heads, there's got to be close to 40 or 50 people who are working on making sure that those shows are done well. After the Yankee game, which obviously is the marquee attraction on the YES Network, the next highest rated programs on the YES Network are the postgame and the pregame. So we know there are a lot of Yankee fans waiting for our coverage, and we want to do as great a job as we can.
I tell people all the time, and I'm not surprised to hear how many people are behind the scenes helping to put out that product, because it views as a well-oiled machine. And all, I mean, as Yankee fans, I don't think we realize sometimes how good we have it with the YES Network, not to belittle other regional sports networks. But if you go look, in my opinion, you go look at their coverage compared to what we get on a nightly basis from you guys, and we're receiving a far superior product, which is something hopefully people appreciate. Jack Curry from the YES Network is here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Hey, are we getting any more JCTVs this year or what?
I'm glad you asked that. Yes, I enjoy doing this digital show that I started a couple of years back called JCTV. I appreciate you mentioning it. My real job took over, and the second thing is I'm writing a book right now with David Cohn, and we've been working on it for a few years. I'm trying to get it finished by the end of this year so that it will be out for Father's Day in 2019. So the book has taken priority over really doing any more JCTV interviews, but I love doing that. It gave me a chance to delve into some other interests that I have. You mentioned music at the top, and that's one of the ways you and I have connected. So yes, I will do some more, but I've got to get this book finished first.
I mentioned too, you obviously did the book with Jeter, and I feel like you're in a very unique position. I mean, obviously there are a number of reporters who have been around the team for however long, and they've had a chance to cover both Jeter and Judge. We heard so many comparisons about the way each goes about their business. You working so intimately with Jeter on that book, and then getting a chance to, you know, see Judge up close and personal. I feel like I trust your word about this a little more than I would the average reporter and or spectator. Do you see the similarities that so many other people were pointing out?
I do, Ralphie, and I want to say this. I was glad that Mike solicited Joe Girardi brought that up last year, because I saw that in Judge's mannerisms. I saw that in some of my interaction with Judge, and I didn't want to be the first one to lay that on him. But you could see it in the way that he dealt with reporters. You could see it in the way when you talk to people, and now I've gotten the chance to meet his parents. I hadn't met them initially when I first had this thought. Derek Jeter's relationship with his parents. And we hope, by the way, that everybody has a fantastic relationship with their parents. But You could sense with Jeter just how vital and how sincere his relationship was with his parents. Now I've seen that with Judge. And I really do think that Judge watched Jeter closely in whatever time they overlapped, and Jeter would speak to the minor league kid that even after he retired, and Judge had some interaction with him there. So, yes, I do think that comparison in terms of the way they carry themselves and their demeanor and the respect that they get from their teammates in the clubhouse, I do think it's all fair and legitimate.
You actually touched on this, you know, because obviously you've been on my radio show before, but it's weird with the radio show because, like, when I do go into sports, I got to be careful how I do it. I can't be too specific about it. And we run a super tight ship. I'm playing like 12 songs an hour, so I can't really talk so long. But I remember us speaking something for my radio show. I think we were promoting JCTV, And you mentioned flying private with Jeter once back from spring training to work on that book. I'm just, is there more to that story that I wasn't able to get at the time? I mean, because that's, it seems like you really, I mean, this wasn't just like a project where, you know, you and Jeter barely spoke. I mean, the fact that you shared a flight with him, a private flight, no less. Was there more to that story?
Well, Jeter's agents approached me and asked me about doing that book, and the Times gave me the clearance to do it. The thing that made it a little tricky, Ralphie, is that they wanted that book done in about 6 months. So there was a lot that we had to condense into a short period of time. I think part of the reason they probably wanted me was I already knew Derek's story. If you just plucked someone out of wherever, they might not have known everything that had happened in Derek's career already. I'd already spoken to a ton of his teammates. I'd already spoken to managers who knew him well and general managers who knew him. So this leads to the question you just asked me. Since we were so tight for time, there was one period where I approached Derek in Tampa in spring training, and I said, hey, I need to get some time for you in the next few days. They're hammering me for chapters, and I need to get some thoughts from you on a bunch of topics. And he said, well, whatever. I don't know if it was a Friday, but he said, well, what are you doing on Friday? I said, Friday is not good. I'm actually supposed to leave spring training and fly back home. He said, no, that is good. He said, I have to, he had to leave spring training for something, and I don't even know if that was ever publicized. He had to fly back to New York himself for something, and he said, jump on this plane with me, and we'll talk then. And Ralphie, it was the best interview I ever had for the book with Derek, because it's a 2-hour and change flight from Tampa to Teterboro, and he couldn't talk to anybody but me. Not that he didn't want to talk to me when we did the other interviews, but you're there. You're going to talk. You're going to give your thoughts. And the flight went very quickly. We got a lot done. I guess one of the funny things about the flight is I can always tell people that Derek Jeter was my pseudo flight attendant, because at one point he said, do you want this chicken sandwich or do you want the chicken Caesar salad? And he reached back and they had packed a couple of lunches there. But that's the gist of the story.
Oh, that's great. We'll wrap it up with Jack Curry from the Yes Network. One more question just in relation to the job in general. Obviously, it's difficult. You can't ask for autographs, so on and so forth. But do you have any keepsakes or any pieces of memorabilia from your years covering the team?
That's a great question. And I'm sorry, but this is going to surprise people. But you're right. When you're in this business every day, at least me, memorabilia and autographs and all that, that's not anything I've ever delved into or anything I can delve into. I guess one kind of cool thing I have is Mariano Rivera pitched his final year in baseball. He pitched at the All-Star game at Citi Field. And I don't know if you recall this, but they brought him in the eighth inning just to make sure that he would get in the game and that American League, in case they had blown the lead in the ninth and he never would have pitched. And he got a standing ovation by both sides, both the National League and the American League All-Stars. And I got a chance to interview him, and it's in a side room at Citi Field, because I had set something up earlier. So Yes got a one-on-one with Mariano away from everybody. And I just kind of love the look on his face as he's doing the interview. I knew Mariano from the time that he was a rookie. And I just think there was a connection there within this picture as I was interviewing him. So somebody was nice enough to take a picture of that for me. So that is one thing I have in my office. And Mariano was one of my favorite players to cover. So I guess that would be one thing that would qualify.
Before we let you go, I'm sure you got the gist by my line of questioning, but obviously this isn't your typical Yankees podcast. We try to talk about things that happen away from the field that fans might be interested in, and it's tough. And I don't know if you find this as well. I mean, it's, you guys are going game by game, so maybe it's a little different, and so many people are looking to you guys for game analysis. But I just feel like, granted, we have a rookie manager, but we got one of the best records in baseball. The team's played relatively well. There really isn't a whole lot to break down. That said, they're in Boston. It's a big series, and it's a big game tonight for Severino. What are you expecting from him?
I think Severino is going to bounce back. I think he's too talented to have continued to struggle. You follow this closely, Ralphie. His last four starts, it's been such an aberration to the rest of his season. He's got an ERA of about 9. He's lost a little velocity on his fastball in those four starts, so that might lead you to believe a little fatigue. His slider hasn't been as sharp as it has been as well. So if you start losing pitches like that or losing the feel for your pitches, you're, you're not the same guy that you were. But I think Severino is too talented to continue to struggle. And it's weird. I agree with you. This is a team that's on pace to win, I think, 104 games. But you would think that the sky is falling based on their last couple of games. They played poorly. The last game against the Orioles, very listless, sluggish, didn't make some plays. And then last night, get out to a four-run lead against the Red Sox and just let that one get away. I think Severino has the ability to calm everything down, go out there, perform well tonight. And the Yankees still have nine more games with the Red Sox. They still have a chance to make a dent in that Red Sox lead. But I think that he has the ability to do that tonight. I would bet on Severino having a good start.
I sure hope so. It'd be a good time for him to get back on track. We'll be watching tonight. What do you got tonight? You got pregame, or is the game, is this a Yes Network or a Picks game tonight?
Actually, this is a Picks game. So we'll have a pregame on Yes at 6:30, and then the game will be on Channel 11 Picks, and then we'll have what we call extra innings post game after that, whatever time that happens to be.
And then we got what, Fox Saturday, ESPN Sunday?
Actually, Yes is carrying the game two on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
So we'll have that coverage. Yeah, we do. We have it as well. And then you're right. Sunday night, ESPN has that's their show on Sunday.
Big final half of the season. Is the Yankees maybe push for a pennant, or maybe they'll be hosting a wild card? We'll find out. We'll be watching, that's for sure, on the Yes Network. In-studio analyst, reporter, and contributor to both the on-air and digital platforms, Jack Curry from the Yes Network, giving us a great spot here in a bunch of time. Jack, thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to have this conversation, and best of luck with the rest of this weekend and the rest of the season.
You're welcome, Ralph. It was my pleasure.
And that's a wrap on episode number 12 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. A big thank you on a game day against the Red Sox, no less. Jack Curry giving us a nice little block of time there. Appreciate him so much. And we'll look forward to watching his coverage the rest of the year on the Yes Network. Again, we're on Google Play, iTunes, Spotify. If you can rate, review, and subscribe, greatly appreciate that. New episodes out every week. By the way, if you're going to Fenway for any of the games this weekend, have a good time. Yes, I enjoy going to Fenway. Even when they're playing the Yankees, as I wear Yankees gear, my motto is, if you don't go looking for trouble, you won't find any. That said, I would be careful walking into Cask and Flagon. You're going to have a hard time getting a beer at Cask and Flagon outside of Fenway if you're wearing Yankees attire. I should mention, too, I almost went to tomorrow's game because I'm about halfway in between New York and Boston. I am coming to you live. We taped the entire podcast this week from Mohegan Sun. I'm here in Uncasville, Connecticut to host an event later with Jesse James Decker. If you don't know her from the E! Show and from her music, maybe you know her husband, Eric Decker, wide receiver in the NFL, just signed a one-year deal with the Patriots. So I'll have a lot to chat about with her later here at Mohegan Sun. But I was going to go up to Boston and then I'll go all the way back to the city tomorrow night. And then I'm like, you know what? I'll just go to the city. Won't have to mess up my routine too much. Look, Boston, it's a nice little town. No place like home. No place like New York, though. That's a wrap on episode number 12 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Again, thank you for tuning in, and let's go, Yankees.